This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This is the second year in the Father and Son series. So once again, I'm learning with Moshe. And we're on Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Still in the Rashi on the Mishnah. We're working on the Rashi about five lines from the top of the page. Lo harei ashok harei hamaveh. And Rashi was going into some detail in explaining exactly what that meant. And what was coming out of this Rashi was the clear result that if any one of the four of us would have been eaten in the Torah, we couldn't have learned the others. And if two of them were written, we couldn't have learned a third. And if three of them were written, we couldn't have learned the fourth. Which means all of them have some level of chiddush, that in a sense the Torah is mechadesh. The Torah tells us something we wouldn't otherwise have known. And we discussed in the first Father and Son series this year, why not? Even non-Jews are obligated in terms of Sheva Mitzvot and Emunah to make laws. Surely it's an obvious rational thing that you make a law that if A damages B, A has to compensate B for the damage he caused. And we said there are a few things. The one thing we said in the last session was that maybe as Jews we could say with our belief in Hashgacha process and the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam really causes everything to happen and that nothing is coincidental, a mazik, somebody whose property caused damage, might be able to claim the fact that my ox damaged your cow, that's hashgacha, that I didn't choose to do that, my ox did it, and God must have wanted it that way. Come to Torah to tell us, yes, it may in fact have been hashgacha, that I'm still responsible as the owner of the ox, or the pig, or the fire, or the whatever. And I think there's another element that we're going to have a look at too further on, and that is, do you think that there is an issue in causing nezek, or is it just a matter of compensation? In other words, if you damage, you have to pay. Or do we actually say there might well be an issue, you're not permitted to damage, and if you were over the issue of nezek, then you have to pay damages. We'll still go into that discussion, but on the surface it would appear from the Rambam that there isn't an issue in causing damage, because in the Rambam, when it comes to things like Hilchos Geneva, the Rambam opens Hilchos Geneva with a statement, Kol HaGoneiv Mamon, anybody who steals money, over a law passer, he's over a law, he's transgressed a transgression of the Torah. In the laws of Gezeilah, theft also, Kol HaGoneiv is Chaver Shobe Pusa, over a law passer, if anybody steals from a stranger, over. But in this case, Mamon and in Chaver Lamazik, which is Nuskei Odom, in the section where the Rambam deals with the damages of your property, if your property causes damage, or you yourself cause damage, the Rambam does not open with any kind of transgression, but simply says, Kol Nefesh Chayosh Yivishusha Shel Odom, if a living animal that is under your authority, that is in your ownership, Shehizikov, has caused damage, Habayin Chayovim Lashalim, the owner has to pay, because Sharei Mamon Hizik, because their money has caused damage. So it is seen from the Rambam that it's not a question of Issur, in which case coming back again to our Rashi, and Rashi says, without the Torah we would not have worked these others out. That would seem to be not that there's some special kind of Issur, no, it's compensation. So why do I need the Torah? Because I cannot say, this is a shlok that God intended to be in, therefore, I'm not tired. And then Rashi shows that the order of the Mishnah is structured conceptually. So moving back in the Mishnah, in the first line, what did we say was the order? When it said Araba Oves Nezikin, Ashur Babo Vamar, what did we say was the order?
She said the way
the Torah is in the Torah. So the Mishnah is telling us that what is an Av? An Av is something that's written in the Torah, and so the Mishnah records them in the order in which Torah is in the Torah. However, when the Mishnah gets into the philosophic analysis of what each of these Avos really is, and it starts with the Lo Harei, actually penetrating to the core differentiator of one Av from the other Av, there is it classifies them in an order that is conceptually more sensible rather than just a sequential order in the Torah. So let's have a look and see again what Rashi has told us is, it tells us in the Lo Harei, Mave is placed before Bor. So once again, the order in the Mishnah at the start is Shor, Bor, Mave, Hever. But in the Lo Harei, we go from Shor straight to Mave. What is the reason? Rashi says two reasons. The one is, because that's the whole structure of the Lo Harei, to say, if Shor and Mave were both written, they both have Ruach HaChaim, and therefore we would not be able to learn Bor, which does not have Ruach HaChaim. So there's a common denominator between Shor and Mave, which is not shared by Bor. In that case, you might ask, but then why do we need Shor and Mave altogether, if they've both got Ruach HaChaim? And just say one of them, why do we need both? That's what Rashi says, the odd time of Achrina. And another reason that it puts Shor and Mavi together in the first analysis is to teach us the Horavusa Ashmur She'afagav She'esh Shneim Ruachayim, that even though Shor and Mavi are both Ruachayim, that both of them are living beings, L'nafi Chad Mishavre, one cannot be learned from the other, and the Gemara will explain why and what that is. Let's go on in the Rashi. Shaharei ha'esh ein bo ruach chayim. V'iloi kasvei rachmona. If the Torah would not have written esh, even if the Torah would have written shor and mave, and bor, three of them, I would not have been able to extrapolate esh. Have I merely thought it? I would have thought maybe Esh is possible.
Even Shor
and if Shor and Mavi were written, we wouldn't be able to learn Esh from it. Not even if Shor and Mavi were written, we would not be able to learn Esh. Lo zeh v'zeh, in the Rashi, Eli Shloshtan, even if all three would have been written, that is, if we would have had Shor, and we would have had Mave, and we would have had Hever, could we have extrapolated Bor? No. Why, says Rashi? Because the three that would have been written are all Dark and Lele Shalazik, and I would have thought that's why they're Chayiv. But Bor is not Dark and Lele Shalazik, and therefore I would have thought that Bor is not Chayiv. So what is the common denominator between all of them? As far as the Gemara is to your mind, the Gemara will explain what additional cases can be learnt out of this Tadashore. So not only are we saying here are the four others, but we're saying let's understand the principle that underlies all four of them, so that we can then extrapolate cases other than the four others. And the Gemara will discuss what those four are. If a mazik causes damage, he has incurred a debt. That's the event that we see that in the very wording of the Mishnah, as we pointed out. So when my ox causes damage to your property, I incur a debt. You now have a claim on me. You can claim from one of two places. You can claim money, and that's the first, the preferred way of compensating you for me to give you cash. If I am unable to give you cash, you can claim for my property. The question is, what class of property? So the value of the property will be the same. And here we need to understand the difference between class and of property and value of property. So, for example, you could have two properties. You could have a property in Manhattan, New York, and you could have a property in Montana. And they could both be worth $1 million. But clearly, if I were to ask you which one would you rather have, would you rather have the one in New York? Why would that be? Why would you prefer the one in New York?
Small,
it's easier to sell, and therefore it's more liquid. It's more like cash. There are more buyers, whereas it's easier to sell. So yes, although both are worth $1 million, there's such a thing as different classes in the halacha. We have three different classes. We have Idis, which is the top class, A class. We have Zuburis, which is C class. And we have Reinus, which is B class. And we learn from the Torah that Meitav Ha'oretz, you as the Nizak, as the one who's been damaged by my property, my office, I have to pay you, if not cash, then from Idis, from the very best of my property. Is what we learn. So that's the Mishnah and the Rashi on the Mishnah. Now let's have a look at what Tosfos deals with here, because there are a few really interesting issues in the Tosfos. The first thing we need to look at is these four Ovis. So we told Arba Ovis Nezikim, the four Ovis Nezikim. When we first learned it, can you try and remember what your initial understanding was? Was it there are only four? Or was your initial understanding is among many others we're going to be talking about four of them?
No, these are
four. Your understanding was that these are the only four. So Tosfos is going to point out, well, if it really meant that, then it should say Arba Ovis Nezikin Hen. There are four Ovis Nezikin. Let's look at the wording of the Mishnah. There are actually two ways of punctuating the Mishnah, and Tosfos will deal with them. Let's look at the Mishnah itself first and see the two ways of punctuating. The one way would be to say, Arba Ovis Nezikin, Shor Ba'abo Ba'amade Ba'ahevet. And that's the way we learned it. We put a full stop at the end of heaven, and that's why we assumed that there were only four, because that's how we phrased it. Arba Ovis Nezikin, there are four Ovis Nezikin, Shor Ba'amade Ba'ahevet. Full stop. Now let's get into a discussion about these four Ovis Nezikin. However, one could also read it, Arba Ovis Nezikin Hashor V'Habor V'Hamaveh V'Ahever Lo Arei Hashor K'Arei Hamaveh V'Lo Arei Hamaveh K'Arei Hashor. Of the four Ovis Nezikin, namely Shor Bo Hamaveh and Hever, one is not like the other and the other is not like the one. In other words, the Mishnah could merely be discussing four of many Ovis. Regarding four particular Ovis, so the Mishnah could be saying there's a group of Ovis Nezikin. There's a subgroup of four that we're going to analyze because these four are different from one another. So those are the two potential ways of understanding the Gemara. The Mishnah. Had the Mishnah inserted the word hen, so had the Mishnah read, Arba Ovis Nezikin hen, there are four Ovis Nezikin, then what would you say the meaning would be?
Then it's Arba Ovis Nezikin hen, and you put the full stop after the header.
Yes, then it's not ambiguous. If the word hain would be there, it's not ambiguous. The absence of the word hain makes it ambiguous.
And so it should be after that.
Well, it's ambiguous, it could be either.
No, but that it didn't put the hain there.
Right, so the question is the absence of the hain, does that tell us anything? Can we say, if it meant an exclusive list of four, it would have said hain? Since it doesn't say hey, it doesn't mean only four. Is that what it is or not? So let's have a look at that. It says this. Arba Ovis Nezikin. It Bukhta Delo Tani Hain Kamaracha. There are places in Shas that don't use the word hain, such as this case. Kubi Gemara Gavi Shlokis Ovis Nezikin. And further on in the Gemara on Das Dalet, where we have the Brisa of the 13 Ovis Nezikin, it also doesn't say hain. The Arba Mechusre Kapora, there are four cases of a person who has become, who needs Kapora, who still has to bring a Kodam, as part of their process of Tahara, they need to bring a Kodam as well, and until they've brought the Kodam, even if they've been to the Mikveh, they're not yet, they're still called Mechusre Kapora, they're missing atonement. And it's also Arba, that would say Arba Hen. And yet there are some places where it specifically says hen. It is Tani Arba Shomrin hen, for example, it says Arba Shomrin, and it says Arba Rosh Hashanah hen. There are four cases of Rosh Hashanah. That's also specifically the rest of Tosfos is another version which we'll have a look at the moment. But the primary Tosfos is just that. So Tosfos is saying the presence or absence of the word hen is just a matter of style. It has no meaning. You can't attach any meaning to whether it says hen or not. It doesn't mean that if it's because it doesn't say hen, that this is not an exhaustive list. Now, in the brackets, the next piece of Tosis from the Gilayim actually takes us through the reasoning that got Tosis to where it is. And that's more by way of question and answer. So let's learn that too. In the interim, I ask Tosis, am I loika amar arba ovis nizikin hain kutani dala rosh hashonim hain? So here Tosis poses a question. Instead of just making a statement, Tosis says, why isn't there the word hain? So Tosis starts with the assumption, as you did, that this is the list, there are four. If there are only four, ask Tosis, why doesn't it use the word hain? Yes, Lomas, Tosis answers, it doesn't say hang because it isn't an exhaustive list. So at this point, Tosfos and the Gilayim is assuming that the absence of the word hang is doubtless specifically not doesn't say hang because these are not the only four. There's a huge list of many others. We're only talking about the four of which we can say Lori Ezekiri Ezek. That's what Tosfos wants to say. So now in the Gilayim, unlike the first piece of Tosis, at this point in the Gilayim, Tosis would be holding that when it says hen, it is an exhaustive list, and when it doesn't say hen, is it ambiguous? No. Exactly right. When it doesn't say hen, it's not ambiguous, it means it's a non-exhaustive list. In that case, Tosis is a kosher, but that's a little bit difficult because the Gilayim, look at the Nachis Tana Leminyana, is a chorus for Tana Gidan, my time, a Lord Tani, Hani. And it's on the Gemara further on, it would appear that the our Mishnah is talking about a specific exhaustive list, even though it doesn't say Hani. Because the Gemara asks further on, after we have a Brisa listing 13 of his Nezikim, the Gemara says, why did our Mishnah not include the other nine? Now, let's take it back. If our Mishnah is not an exhaustive list, then there's no question that it didn't include the other nine because it's not trying to include everything. Right. The Gemara is assuming that even without the hand, the list is exhaustive. And so why doesn't it say hand? Comes back to the question in that case. If the list is exhaustive, why doesn't it say hand? Whether hain is included or not is just a matter of style. It doesn't tell you anything about whether or not it's exhaustive. So the Gilayim is quite an interesting Tosfos because here you see how brief Tosfos can be. The first four lines of Tosfos is the core of Tosfos. That's how we usually have the Tosfos. We're fortunate that we have included here the Gilayim, which takes us through the reasoning that yes, Tosfos is final comment, which we have in the first four pages. The comment is, the conclusion of Tosfos is, hen is irrelevant. Hen is a matter of style. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. When it doesn't say hen, that does not mean that the list is exhausted, is not exhausted. It might not say hen and still be exhausted. In fact, our very Gemara is such an example. This is a complete list. The Gemara will discuss later on what are the parameters of this complete list, what's included in it, but this is a complete list, it's not a partial list. It would seem, though, that when it does say hen, it is exhausted. But hen is not ambiguous. But the absence of saying hen does not mean that it's not exhausted. If hen is not there, it could be exhausted or it could be not exhausted, but if hen is there, it's definitely exhausted.
So we can see from the Tosfos that it's for sure when it says hen, it means that it is an exclusive list, that it's the only four.
If it says hen, it would be only four exclusive list.
So the question is obviously why would our Mishnah be doesn't it say hen if we know it's an exclusive list? Because the Mishnah being careful on this word and should say hen, because by saying hen, it means it's an exclusive list. So every time it should be exclusive, it should say hen.
So you're asking in that since pain is unambiguous, or the absence of pain is ambiguous, which our conclusion says that it is ambiguous, why word it ambiguously if you could word it clearly, bearing in mind, as we know, how careful the Mishnah is with every word? So I understand that without pain being there, it is ambiguous. But your question is, why does the Tanya of the Mishnah
make it ambiguous?
Yeah, why does he make it ambiguous? Have you got an answer to this?
The answer is because in the Gemara and the Dalit Amud Aleph, that's Jim on the page at the bottom, talks about more than Arbat.
So we've got the Bryce of Rabbi Yeah. Here, we've got the
13 Bryce. And 24, mm-hmm. And they ask it. And it says that it is, like, it quotes that Gemara here, and it says in Tosfos that it is an exclusive, that it is the only four. And the Gemara there, it says it's the only four, excluding all, it's the only four in its category. So without Knossos, it's the only four, and without all these other things, it's the only four. But it's really not the only four.
That's very interesting what you're saying. You're saying there is a superset of 24, as far as we know, 24 of us. Depending on how you define the criteria for the subsets, there will be different numbers. So there's 13 in the one brisa, 24 in the other brisa, and 4 in our Mishnah. So you're saying that yes, our Mishnah is an exhaustive list based on certain criteria, but if we loosen up the criteria, there will in fact be a whole lot more than 4. So it's right to be ambiguous, because in some ways it's an exhaustive list, and in some ways it's not an exhaustive list. It's not the total number of all obvious mizikin, but it is the total number of all obvious mizikin based on the criteria which the Gemara is going to set further on Daf Dalet. And the Mishnah therefore leaves us with that openness, saying, yeah, it is exhaustive, but it isn't exhaustive, we're going to actually discuss what the parameters are, and leaves it open so that we don't start with an assumption that it's either an exhaustive list or a non-exhaustive list. Okay, let's leave this session over there. So we've completed the Mishnah with all of the Rashi and the first of the Tosfos. In our next session, we're going to do the third Tosfos, not the second Tosfos, but the Tosfos of Lo Harei Hashra.